Hello everybody, welcome to our review session, the first draft review. Today is April 11, 2013, and our plans are today mainly just to go through the first version of the draft that we have and presenting what we try to do there and getting feedback from everybody involved. So, do you have, I can't see the live thing. Do you have my slides up?
Yes, the slide is up on page one.
Great. Yeah. So let's go to page two. Just a reminder, what is the communique? So what's the role? The communique is not a summary of what all that happened during the Ontology Summit. It's just one of the deliverables, and this, in particular in this year, focusing on some aspects, but definitely not trying to capture everything. And it's not a research paper, but it's really a message that we write as a community to the larger community, the ontology community and related communities. So everybody who's interested in ontologies, basically. Next slide, slide three. So what do we want to communicate? And this wasn't really easy to narrow down because we had such a diverse, we had very diverse presentations and diverse views on ontology evaluation. And here's where we came up. Obviously one aspect is we want to raise awareness of ontology evaluation, and we want to showcase that there's a critical part of ontology and development across the whole life cycle. And the second aspect is that we want to just make people more aware of the fact that there is a growing level of support and a growing number of tools that are available for developers of ontologies. And one other goal is to create a consensus on, or at least a step in the direction of a consensus, what should be evaluated, when and how. And that was particularly challenging because I don't think that there is currently a consensus. And the people who attended more than one of the presentations that we had will probably have all realized that there are just very different views on what is evaluated and how and when in the life cycle. The target audience for this communique is people who develop ontologies or evaluate ontologies or should be doing so. So it's there was a question of can't we try to reach a wider audience, and Amanda and I both agree that it's hard to write a document which tries at the same time to address people who don't have much experience with ontologies. We will try to address and try to give a broader message in the executive summary, which is part of the communique. That goes now to the structure, and that's on the slide four. So we start out with the executive summary, which is missing currently in our draft since we want to nail down the content before we summarize it. And then we have basically an introduction and then several sections which give an overview of the life cycle, specify the activities, the role of evaluation and the characteristics which are evaluated, and the methods that can be used. I have to say, not as strong as on metrics as I was hoping for, but that's just the outcome of what we had during the Ontology Summit, where often the metrics weren't nailed down. So, if people have suggestions there, I would be very thankful for that. The whole thing ends with an outlook on tool support and recommendations, and especially the recommendation section again is something which is incomplete and we need to work on. Next slide, slide five. So feedback. We want there's technical. Okay, somebody muted himself. Good. So we want your suggestions. Obviously, please email your suggestions to the Ontology Summit mailing list so that we can see it and discuss it. But you know, just as my since I've done this before, let me tell you that general comments are not very helpful usually. It's much more helpful to get specific suggestions, you know, replace this sentence with that, or, you know, the more specific you are, the more likely it is that it will find its way into the communique. Next slide. This is just the schedule, review of the schedule. We are now presenting the first draft, and will be next week. Wait a minute, in 2 weeks, the second draft, is that correct? On the date, correct, Peter?
Well, next week is the 18th.
Yes, but when was the second draft? Is that on the 25th?
Next week is the final, your second review session. We called it the final.
Yeah, okay, so the dates on the schedule are off. Sorry about that. So the 18th.
25th should read the 18th, then?
I'm not sure. I mean, I've copied that from the calendar, and maybe there was some changes. Everybody ignore the date on the slide, because just look on the Ontology Summit wiki page, where the most recent version of this and the authoritative version of this calendar is. The point is that before the start of the symposium, on the 2nd of May, we will have a final draft. So there will be no review or changes during the symposium. I just put that out here as a reminder for everybody who hasn't been part of the first presentations on the CS schedule. So if you want to have an impact on the communique, you need to write us an email. When we see each other, it's going to be too late. Okay, and afterwards we have an endorsement period and then we'll publish it. Next slide. This is just the link. I think Peter uploaded a snapshot of the document as well, but it's a Google Doc document. So I ask you all to have a look at that document in some form or another. Now, so I assume everybody is now on the first page of the draft document, and I suggest that what we're doing is we just go through the text. Amanda and I will just talk a little bit about what we want to do in each section, and then you people can provide feedback. So the introduction obviously has some purpose of introducing the document, and the main thing that I wanted to get across here, or we wanted to get across, is that ontologies, when we talk about ontologies, one reason why people evaluate it differently is that they just mean different things when they talk about ontologies. So ontologies can be used as glossary. They can be used as data models or domain models in a software engineering sense, or at least they have similarities to them, and they have similarities to database. And depending on how you're going to use your ontology or what your main purpose for it is, you will use techniques which might be applicable to each of these levels. And we want to consider all of them, because all of them, all of these aspects are important for ontologies. But of course, that makes ontology evaluation tricky, because it's, you know, you have such a multifaceted technology, and you need to evaluate all of these aspects. So the main concerns that we are interested in evaluating are whether the humans can understand the ontology, whether the ontology represents the domain appropriately, whether the representation of the domain fits the requirements for the intended use of the ontology, and whether the deployed ontology, that means the thing that is answering queries, for example, meets the requirement of the IT system that it's part of. And Amanda and I borrowed here from Michael Denny and used his terms for model quality, model fitness, and I don't know whether he used system fitness, but he used something similar, and added intelligibility as the criterion for the human level. So one flag which I want to hold up immediately is that there is going to be some terminology clash regardless of what words we use. So, for example, I think Matthew uses the word quality in the sense we are using fitness here. So Matthew uses the word quality. When he says quality, he means meeting the requirements. And that's what we mean by fitness here. So one question that we will probably have to discuss is what are the best terms here and then replace them across the document. I think that's all I want to say currently about the introduction. Amanda, do you have any comments?
So I don't think I have anything to add immediately about this section. And we'll go back and discuss some of the points later. Or I forget. Yeah. Or after we've gone through the general overview, right? Is that our plan?
Yes.
Forgetting. Okay. So.
Okay. Are you running the chat?
Question. I think. Are you looking for like immediate EC wordsmithing right now or later?
No, wordsmithing. I think we shouldn't do during this session. Wordsmithing is best done offline.
But if people have particular notes that they catch something they think, you know, is unfortunate or could be better done, if they want to stick that in the chat.
Yeah.
Right.
Like what's suggested, like changing IT to information, IT systems to information systems, I think that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when I said, the question is, when I said wordsmithing is best done on the offline, it's really, you know, there are probably going to be spelling error or grammar errors. I think we don't need to discuss that. But putting in the chat, that is great. Steve?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, my one comment, which is, just a sort of a stepping back a bit, and I just scanned this. I haven't read the whole document, but it seems to be very emphasizing the fit to purpose, if you like, which, for better or worse, we have been calling sort of extrinsic evaluation. But it seems to really, the part about the structural evaluation seems to have almost disappeared from this document. And that's what's behind my suggestion on the fifth question, which I put in the chat. And looking through the text, it doesn't seem to touch on what I think is the easiest thing you can do. It's hidden away inside there. So I'm just sort of, you know, most of it is, you know, domain competency questions. Does it fit the domain and all the scope? But not the easy stuff like, gee, this is a modeling. You know, if you've got errors in the actual structure of the model.
Well,
right.
There is a section which we call. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that it's discussed in some specifics in the discussion of the model build phase and how that's evaluated. And when we talk about requirements coming up, there's also a discussion of how the types of requirements that you're talking about derive from. from the usage requirements, but what we did do is take the approach that that we are focusing on ontologies used in some information system, as Todd suggests, and that whatever requirements there are derive from requirement at that level. So these things, the specific kind of structural stuff does emerge, but it emerges as part of these quality and fitness and of these different types and intelligibility.
Well, I guess it's sort of like a metaphor of an architect, let's say, listening to a customer, what they want in their house or something, and those are all certainly customer requirements, but they can still do a bad job of designing something which, you know, would fall down because he hasn't done the structural analysis or the beams are way too narrow.
Right.
Or like that.
So Steve, what I would ask is if you would, so one thing is I think your point may mean that we need to add an indication of something earlier in the document, but I would ask if you would, as we go through the document, see whether your concerns are addressed. And,
okay.
And
yeah. All right.
So
I haven't read the model build.
I think they may be, but.
Very careful.
So I think actually that what we mean by model quality, and I'm aware reading Matthew's comment here that we might change the name, but, you know, stick with the name for now and, you know, talking about the concept, not a particular name here. That what we mean by model quality is, you know, one aspect of it is, does it follow best practices for development? And some of these, or most of these best practices, are independent of specific requirements. And, you know, that you have, for example, a consistent ontology, it's clearly, you know, that's something that fits into that. And so when we talk about model quality, these are the things which can be largely evaluated intrinsically.
Okay, I'll watch as we go through the document and sort of see if in fact you have covered it. So no problem.
I'm just to Matthew's comment on quality. Matthew, I agree, and we actually discussed this somewhat extensively, but I could not come up with a satisfactory alternative. So we decided to actually put this question explicitly to the community. What strategy should we use to capture what's meant there so that we don't conflict or clank with this existing body of practice and knowledge that's so relevant to what we're doing. So we are actively looking for suggestions. You know, people have previously suggested things like accuracy, or, you know, I offered verisimilitude, which is really.
Amanda?
So we're looking for those suggestions. Yes.
No, you were just gone for a second. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, the whatever the word was that you just mentioned, since I can't pronounce it, I was against it. No, I knew I would have to talk about this. Michael, we can't hear you.
Okay, sorry. So you had mentioned in the overview that you had hoped that there would be more metrics, but then when it sounded like in the conversation with Steve, Steve was like suggesting metrics and you were de-emphasizing them. So could you clarify what your expectations were for metrics?
Well, okay. I think, I don't know whether we want to have this discussion now. I wanted to have more. I think it's, even if we had more, it would be very hard to put it in the document the way it's, I mean, we had so much other stuff. But, ultimately, if you want to do an evaluation, you want to do an evaluation against a specific metric, right? And for many of the things that we have discussed during the summit, we basically said this is important. But we never, you know, discussed in detail of how to measure success. So, and part of that had to do that, so many other things were vague, like when do you test it and you know, at which stage and what are the tendencies and all of that. And I think we, at least what I hope is that we we propose something in here which allows us at least to get the stages clear and when the tests are done. The metrics, will be nice, but maybe not in this document.
Right, because to me, the more specific you get, like you say, when you say what is a test, when you actually say, like, what are you testing, what are the inputs to the test, what is the actual result of the test, I think that goes a long way to clarifying a lot of the discussion that's been happening about the extrinsic versus intrinsic idea that, it's just a question of what are you considering to be the input. And the intrinsic evaluation ideas that Steve was talking about are where you're just simply taking the actions alone and that's the only input. And then the test, would be, if you're saying consistency or some kind of ontological analysis like OntoClean or whatever. Whereas the other kinds of tests include not only the axioms as input, but some other information, some other specification of a requirement in some form or what have you. And then even then, how do you represent that requirement? You discuss that in the document. You and Amanda discuss in the document, so that's good too. But I just thought that the more detail we could get on those, then that would help clarify a few other disagreements. But now, then I end up getting too much detail, then we end up having a research paper, which is not really the purpose here. But just my comment there.
Right.
Yeah, I agree, both with the trade-off and with the desire of having specificity.
Right. So one thing we did was we have some reference to different types of characteristics early on, and then there's more specific discussion in as we go through the individual life cycle phases or stages. And
this is a good way to transition to the next section. Maybe you can talk about the next section and how it is, what role it is for the rest of the picture.
let me just make one other note, though, which is also that keep in mind that I'd like everybody to keep in mind that this communique will not be the only output from the summit, and that one of the things we can do is have complementary documents that are referenced here where we go into more detail. Now, some of that, I think the outputs of our the O5 hackathon will be probably figure in as part of that, but there may be other things we want to do, providing more detail in supplemental pieces. Okay, the next section, the ontology life cycle and overview. So here, what we've tried to do, first of all, is to just give a sense of ontologies as artifacts that go through life cycles or undergo life cycles, just like or similar to what software or technical artifacts in general go through with some specific emphases for ontology. Some of the language for these phases we took from the track D input, and then we did some separation of elements within that, but that's also something that I don't think we're particularly wedded to, and if people want to make suggestions for more appropriate or better fit or better aligned with software systems engineering activities. That's something we're happy to take those suggestions and review them. We state just below the figure that this is only a schematic. Just to give a sense of this kind of flow, and that the actual sequence of phases that any ontology goes through will vary in part along with project methodologies, just like software life cycles do, and in part based on the specifics of a particular project and what happens during it. And then we talk about how evaluation fits into this. And here we're on the bottom of page two. One thing that we want to emphasize is that evaluation should be going on throughout the ontology life cycle. And we make a distinction between two kinds of evaluation processes or events, sort of big evaluations that we call transition-oriented in here, that are designed to get all the feasible information about the whether the product of some stage of work meets all the requirements that are applicable to it, and whether it's ready for another stage of work to begin on it. And those are sort of what people think of as, you know, the big evaluations. There's also this essential element of small feedback-oriented evaluations, the kind of thing that a developer can or a designer can do at any point when they want to check on things, and that are may use the same tools and methodologies, but is it's not so resource intensive, and we want to encourage readers to think of this as something that should be enabled, right? The people working at any given stage should be able to get this feedback, prevent errors from piling up, and so forth. Then, moving down to page three, we talk about we specifically orient evaluation towards requirements. And we said it evaluations that are performed at any point depend on the requirements that are applicable to that point, and that identification of the requirements starts with intended usage and continues, that also continues throughout the life cycle. So identification requirements is a focal activity at certain stages like exploration and design, but it continues to happen throughout the life cycle as the results of each stage uncover new requirements or flaws in previously specified ones and so forth. So the information flows between phases of different kinds of phases in many directions, and can also flow between full cycles of, you know, exploration to use for different versions of an ontology, for example, that may in fact be overlapping. And then we did not, you know, as we discussed during the last synthesis session, we opted not to focus on the intrinsic, extrinsic, blended, you know, framework, but we did think it was worth including some discussion of what's really behind that, in that some of the requirements will be focused on the interaction of the ontology and some aspects of its environment. Some will be things like the structural requirements we were talking about before, entirely internal to the ontology itself, and the sort of thing that can only be evaluated using a good ontological understanding and ontology-specific tools and methods. And a third category that includes things like licensing conditions, access, and costs that are just as important from the project management perspective and so forth, but are entirely independent of the internal characteristics of the ontology. And we explicitly state here that because those are not something that requires specifically ontological understanding to evaluate or to design processes for. They're better understood as within the realm of project managers and other technical experts, and so we do not talk about them further in this document. So this is where we're sort of explaining that this one group of requirements that isn't really ontological is important, but we are not the one. You're not going to attempt to add anything to existing techniques and so forth for evaluating it. So that, and that is the end of the life cycle overview, and then we go into looking at the individual phases in some detail and the accompanying evaluation questions or types that go along with it. Steve, you want to go ahead?
I will wait for final observation in a little bit, but it seems like where you're headed, okay, you're saying, so we're going to leave off some of the things that really don't have anything to do with an ontology and stick with the first two types, you say. And by the same token, I think some of those first two types are also common to any other software engineering undertaking. So if we really want to focus on the evaluation of an ontology versus the evaluation of a software development project, we might even go a little further than that in terms of scoping this specifically to an ontology. Just wanted to hear your reaction to that.
I'm not sure what specifically you would have in mind, but if to the extent that we can identify things, existing practices, without sort of, you know, getting into so much detail that the document can't, you know, gets too long or falls apart for lack of structure, to the extent that we can say, you know, this set of practices is applicable, should be applied, and can handle this part of it, but And if tools exist to do that for ontologies, then I think we should say that. And if it's applicable, but tools don't exist to do it for ontologies, then that's something important to state in our futures, you know, future looking final section, I think.
Right, and I guess that's actually you touched on one point, which do we ever say there are tools that exists? That's way down there. I see. Page 10.
Yeah.
All right. Although it's very high level, I guess. The only tools I see written in there are enterprise architects.
Is that still in there? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was...
in the third paragraph. But anyway, we'll get to that. It's just,
yeah.
Again, I'm...
It may be something that we
my perspective on this was, we're going to have the survey, so my idea was we don't want to duplicate that, but rather refer to it.
Right.
So, you know, giving an analysis, I mean, we talk about the capabilities these tools support in here and the system build, which comes later. But we don't link the capabilities to the tools, mainly because that is could be duplication of what is going to happen later. And we don't have the result of the survey yet, so we would not do an as good job as the survey can do.
Now, I don't want to get focused on just the tools, but I'm trying to think, you know, the value add of this communique and the supporting material, I would like to think, is specifically for ontologies, not a, you know, tutorial on how one does software engineering or software system building.
Well, and, so you know, here you formalize wonderfully the problem we had, right? So there was just two sides. If you read the summary of track B, this is all about software engineering. I mean, with the bent on ontology and how ontologies play into it, but the way track B has looked at ontologies is ontologies as software products, as databases. That's basically their focus. The way track A has looked at it is ontology as models, or as a representation of reality, which can be evaluated mainly with a focus on evaluating the structure of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the implementation, whether the thing, you know, how they're implemented, whether there's how they're serialized, how they're, you know, whether they're up and running, whether there are response time, and all of that is completely ignored from track A's perspective. So what we try to do in the overview is, and track C has had both perspectives. Track C had a strong focus on what are the operational, what's the operational environment and what are the requirements which flow from that, the business, you know, even from the business side, which leads to requirements for the model, especially with respect to making it accurate for domain and accessible to domain experts. But at the same time, also leads to other requirements which will have impact on how the thing is implemented. So we try to marry all three of these perspectives, and that was the point of the introduction where we make the analogy to, you know, glossary and more, you know, domain model and database.
Mm-hmm.
We try to give all of them space.
Okay, I will. You guys have done a great job so far. I don't want to sound critical, but
No. You need to be critical, otherwise we are not. It's not getting better. So, you know,
right.
I'm absolutely happy. You know, and I think your points are all I take. I'm just trying to. Explain what our conundrum was and what our problem was we tried to tackle. Namely, basically have three different perspectives on ontology and marry them.
Right.
And they didn't marry each easily.
I guess my parting comment, and then I'll let Peter go because he's in the queue, is that this is never going to be the go-to place for finding out how to build a system, right? I mean, there are lots of books and all kinds of things. So I'm trying to think of this will serve a role as the go-to place if someone's thinking, you know, I could do this with normal software, you know, model view control, you know, architectural approach that lots of people use, which is not ontology specific. In fact, model means, you know, usually just a relational database or something. But I want this to be the go-to place when someone's thinking, okay, you know, I want to think about these newfangled things I've heard called ontologies. What's different about it? So I would like to, you know, bold face, you know, in your exploration section coming up, you know, why do we need an ontology as opposed to something else?
Okay, Steve, I think then we will be disappointed because that's certainly not the audience we wanted to reach. I mean, if any, then it's the people who want to build on, who already know what an ontology is and are convinced that they want to build one, but now want to build a good one. And, you know, want to build a good one means they need to keep track of the different aspects, like what are the requirements and how, you know, all of the three aspects that I just mentioned have to be considered if you want to have a successful project.
Okay.
And I think the document you want to write is a useful document. It's just not the one we have written.
Okay.
And so you might be disappointed with that.
If I can just add to that for a second, in my view, a large part of the readership, the intended audience for this, is people who are doing ontologies and not doing any evaluation right now. And they may not even realize they should be or can be. So because I think the ground around us is littered with this problem. And so one of the goals, I think, is to get across both the importance of doing it and to do so in a way that gives enough detail that it could be imagined, but and that a person could be motivated, but not necessarily. I mean, just given the format and the length, it's not going to be enough detail to fully execute it. I hope that we can include references to resources for that. So that's a major part of the audience, in my view. Another major part, I think, when we talk about tools and we talk about specific needs for where evaluation happens in it, I think that tool builders are also part of the audience, and it should help them understand what we think is needed as a community as a result of all of our discussions, you know, what we think is well-supported or not well-supported and would be a good priority to work on. Because they could also, you know, reference that if they're applying for funding to build something later. But, okay, enough. Peter.
Yes, I put this down on the chat, too. Your diagram seems to be missing a bit. I mean, if one calls that the ontology life cycle diagram, then I can't even see where the ontology is built. I mean, unless you say model build is the ontology, is building the ontology or implementing the ontology. So I suggest
yes.
Looking at the seven life cycle phases that Mike Denny used in his survey. Actually, even in his survey, he doesn't have the stage where one actually formalizes and reduces, I mean, all the concepts and relations into a formalization. I mean, in an ontology language. So I think the diagram probably needs a little cleaning up somewhere. So
we did actually start from those from that list of phases, and then did some. In trying to make clear what phases might actually mean, so the build phase got divided into the build of the ontology or the model, and the system that uses it. And the way those things feed together, for example, the same with the design.
But either way, I mean, I'll leave that to you and Fabian to work out the details.
Okay. Terry. You might need to unmute Terry.
*7, Terry.
Peter, could you capture your point on the chat?
Yeah, that a lot of the discussion seems to be from a perspective of someone evaluating an ontology that they've developed. Have we got any thoughts to evaluating an ontology that's delivered?
Lots.
You want to decide if you want to use it.
We want to, that absolutely should be part of what we're capturing, and what it's addressed explicitly somewhere in the model build, which we'll get to, but it's a relatively small discussion. We wanted to try and convey that this set of activities, for the most part, much of this needs to happen for the ontology reuser as well. So you still need to know what your usage is and your requirements before you, and have some degree of analysis before you can evaluate a model for reuse or adaptation in your particular, you know, whatever it is that you're trying to do. I don't think we've made that clear enough.
Jump in, Terry. I think I'll just make the same point stronger. I think that from the life cycle goal perspective, it doesn't really matter except for in the build phase. Everything else stays the same. I mean, whether you are able to reuse something or not. I mean, actually, we will go to that in the model talk in the model build section. We are assuming that you come up with different components, and so whether some of these components you write from scratch or you reuse them, that's decided there, and then you still evaluate at that level for that whether you can actually reuse something or need to adapt it. But everything else stays the same.
This is Terry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, good. I had my star sixes and sevens reversed. I think that the point I was trying to get to is, an experience with systems engineering, that if you buy a component off the shelf, you often have to adapt your other requirements to fit. So, you know, it isn't quite the same thing. You can't just take a set of requirements that you've developed, in camera, and take them out and decide whether some outside ontology is usable or not. You almost have to massage the two together. So that's all I was getting to. Is it?
Sure.
This is the software reuse question, really. That's all.
Yeah. Well. So again, I think your point is good, and we need to make things more explicit how that process is meant to be covered by what we're talking about. But so the two things to consider here are that, one, that these phases feedback on each other, right? So you may, you know, find a model, evaluate it, and that may make you reconsider your design, right? But a much more common situation right now, at least from what I'm seeing, is that people have the idea they have a particular kind of usage in mind. They want to mark up their data with semantic markup. They want to, present something as linked open data. They want something that can monitor a certain information flow. For certain patterns of information, and they're asking, isn't there an ontology out there already that I can just plug in here? And they, when they're going about trying to find that out, really the only thing that they're commonly looking at is the quote unquote domain, right? And that almost never get, unless they're within an area where there are lots and lots of developed ontologies with lots and lots of annotation about how they're going to be used, generally this approach is inadequate. They need to know more. They need to know that this ontology can support the specific kinds of operations that they need to do at a certain level. So it may be the case that the design and, you know, the exploration analysis design steps are more limited. They may be shallower, to the point that you get to model shopping and seeing what's there. But there still has to be something there to compare it against in order to know, you know, that it's, going to even roughly potentially meet your need. But we do need to make it more explicit. So we should move into the the discussion of the individual phases as we have them right now. The first one, and this is, we're now at the top of page four, is exploration. I think we agreed that I'm going to talk about this one. So this, this is similar to what I talked about in my, when I presented, you know, however many sessions back, about the gathering of the, you know, business requirements and transformation and so forth. This stage would have to do with that gathering of business requirements. What we talk about here in the explanation of what's going on here, we talk about it starting with the intended usage and basically unpacking it. It may come with very little specification, and this is the stage at which it gets extended and clarified until there's enough information that you can guide technical decisions at some level, right? Again, the level of specificity, it may differ, so it may be rough guide, and then it goes on to analysis and so forth, and then you come back and, you know, back and forth, or you may do a very thorough job here and hope for fewer iterations. That's variable. But the idea is that the initial information about the intended usage is expanded and documented until you've got enough information that you can begin to figure out what your technical needs are, what your technical decisions are. And this, as previously noted, this is something that involves technical, ontological expertise, operational expertise, and understanding of the context in which this project is happening. You know, who's sponsoring this? What are their real goals? Those things all have to be, and if there's a larger system being built, technical expertise is other elements of society, the ontology are probably to come together not sequentially, but together in sort of an interaction to elicit enough information. And there's a sort of a high-level list there of what are some of the questions that at this phase aims to answer. What kind of information should it gather? And I'll pass it along to Fabian for the next phase.
Assuming nobody has questions about the exploration phase. Any questions? Okay, no questions. Model design. Well, this is basically the going back to Matthew's distinction he presented last Thursday, where he said distinguished conceptual ontology, I think was the term, from logical ontology and physical ontology. And we split the output of what he called the conceptual ontology in two parts. One is identifying, which one was what we meant by ontological analysis. Wait a minute, Amanda. You talked about exploration. Why am I talking about ontological analysis?
Yes, thought so.
Okay, I wasn't prepared for that. Okay, so we split that up into ontological analysis and model design phase, and the ontological analysis basically looks at, tries to identify the key concepts that are relevant for the domain that is supposed to be represented in the ontology. And by and this includes individuals, classes, relationships between the classes, everything which is of interest. And in addition, it tries to map the terminology which is used in the domain, or by, you know, often by different groups, to these concepts. So, and that, as everybody knows, probably on this call, is quite some work, because you need to disambiguate terminology or and find out whether people who use indeed different terms mean the same thing. And well, then there's here a list of the things how you can evaluate this and start. Well, I don't want to read the whole list, but the idea is basically you need to capture everything which is relevant, and you need to capture it in a way that is understandable to the people who are going to use the ontology, in addition to the ontologist himself, of course. The output of this might not be in any machine interpretable form. This can be, you know, natural language, UML diagrams, conceptual maps, whatever. So it's not formal. Any questions?
I'll add something here. I don't know if we should add it in text, but just when we talk about the disambiguation, identifying the classes and relationships here, one way this differs from the kind of activity that's going on in exploration is that it's specifically the ontologist's conceptual analysis, you know, and relationship expertise that's coming into play. And so, you know, things that are presented as, you know, by the domain folks as data elements or as, you know, operational concepts that they use may exhibit patterns like munging, you know, two relationships into one, or having an implicit entity behind a relationship that isn't actually discussed anywhere. And in the ontological analysis, those are sort of brought out. You sort of say, okay, well, there's something being referred to here that's not being talked about, and working with the domain experts to figure out what you need to add that entity to the list and disambiguate it.
Okay. Steve?
Yeah, I was just a little surprised at your last comment, Fabian, where you said, and this doesn't really have to be you know, a model, it can just be natural language or something.
Right.
Because it's going to be hard to pull some of that out, I would think. I would have thought you would have already started stubbing out some sort of skeletal model at this point where you can evaluate.
Either I misspoke or you misunderstood. I didn't say that you don't produce a model. I mean, in a way, you know, the word model is flexible. You do a representation of reality, so that's a model. I'm just saying it doesn't need to be in logical language or an ontological language. It needs to be in a form. That you can discuss it with your domain experts. If the domain experts are fluent in CLIF, do it in CLIF. But you know, assuming okay, they need to less formal version than, you know, conceptual maps or something are good as well. You just need, obviously, in the next steps, you then formalize it, but that's, you know, that's the first step.
Okay, so you're deferring the actual building of the ontology until the, well, design phase and then the model build phase, is that right?
It's really the
yes
build
and
phase.
No.
Yes.
I mean, here's an important thing to note, which we say, but we might perhaps need to emphasize. It's not the case that phases don't overlap or can't overlap, right? So the ontological analysis and the beginning of informal modeling
mm-hmm.
May well blur together. One may be used as a tool to help the other, right? So we can just stick with the activity.
I'm thinking very I'm thinking in very concrete terms. I know that, and I have observed, a lot of people, for example, will make something a subclass of something else, which really isn't a subclass. It's a property. It's some kind of an attribute, and they're just not thinking right. Okay, it's a very common error. I saw it just 2 weeks ago with some people. When am I going to be catching those kinds of things? This is very not general and abstract.
You will capture this here already on this stage. It doesn't matter that if you work with them and they try to represent their domain accurately and suddenly make a mistake, misrepresenting it, making something a subclass which isn't a subclass, then you should capture it here.
Okay.
You might capture it. You might not have a tool. It depends. Let me just rephrase or reiterate what Amanda said. Everything might blur together. What we are trying here is breakout stages, because these are conceptually independent activities. If you happen to use OWL as the medium to do the ontological analysis, and you put the axiom right at the same place, you're basically doing, you're going from ontological analysis to build immediately. And if you then run a reasoner, and the reasoner finds that there's an inconsistency, and you learn from that, okay, I shouldn't have made this a subclass, but modeled in a different way, then you're finding it not conceptually on a different level than the what we call the ontological analysis. As we said, these stages blur together in practice.
Mm-hmm. Okay, to answer Simon's question on the chat, it was something I observed 2 weeks ago. It was in a group that was learning how to do modeling, and they were modeling a bookstore with a bunch of books, and they had a class of products for sale, which was books or book. And then they started putting, as a subclass of book, they had like shipping method, okay, as a subclass of book, which is clearly wrong. It's not a book. So it's maybe an elementary error, and it is an elementary error, but it's something that for a lot of people, you want to, pop those out as early as possible to make them see that. That's all.
Steve, I want to say, what you say is true, and certainly even if you're not doing any formal modeling at all, that should be something that is caught at the ontological analysis level. Somebody says shipping method is a kind of book.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to raise flags and say, is it true that every individual shipping method has all the characteristics books have, like they're red and so forth and so on? But it's also important to separate that from formalization, because remember that, I'm going to say something a little bit controversial. You can take it as hyperbole if you want, but at a certain level, there's no such thing as being really a class or really a property. Right? And it depends on what language you're formalizing in, but you can have logically equivalent representations, right, that handle things in each of these ways. What there really is a bottom line of is that the relationship between shipping method and book is not kind of, right? Whatever they are.
That's right.
So that's part of what the point of separating this is, that you can get those things out without making your formalization or your implementation commitments, and also that you can do it. You're usually at this in the ontological analysis stage. That's a stage with a high level of interaction with, in many cases, with domain experts and it often is done with, you're actively doing it, and you're actively capturing what they're saying, and they're looking at it, and you know, you're going back and forth in this way. And
right.
In most cases, that needs to be an informal. It can't require understanding ontology distinctions for them to understand what.
Right.
I guess you're getting out of it.
Make sure we don't forget the elementary stuff in
yep.
those evaluation questions. We want to put in at least a little bit, I think, of elementary stuff. I mean, you have
okay.
are the defined relationships well defined, which is fine.
If you want to suggest specific questions that we should include there, you know, please put it in the chat and.
Okay, I will think about that and maybe
okay.
throw some out
or email later either one.
Yeah. Okay.
Audie.
Hi. Can I be heard? Am I
yes.
heard?
Yep.
Okay. I mean, this is just more to build on what Steve was just saying, and it's a general comment with the way that the life cycle phases are presented. I mean, ultimately, when this error that Steve is discussing is caught, comes down to the methodology that the ontology team decides to implement. If they don't, I mean, in many ways, the life cycle phases that we're presenting are a form of best practices, though they might not necessarily be followed in the same, let's say, procedure or order that is presented in the paper.
I think Amanda said that
earlier
at least
in the
twice.
Call.
Yes.
We're trying actually not to recommend a procedural order, but it's...
The problem is... The problem is there are certain dependencies, right? There's clearly the case that you need to get your requirements first before you deploy something, right? Or at least you should, because otherwise it's a mess. But at the same time, there are none of these stages are, or many of the activities that happen during the stages feed into each other. You just because you did do your design doesn't mean you never touch it again. So life is messy. So what we try to do here is break out the activities that happen during the life cycle of an ontology and classify them in or break them out in these big stages and to associate with the activities the kinds of evaluation that should be happening when you do the activities. And since there is some kind of mesh, schematic order, or there is some canonical order, we try to capture that, and not canonical in the sense that it needs to be this way, but in one way, how it makes sense to order these things. And just because there are arrows which pointing in one direction in this diagram doesn't mean that you after you finish the phase you will never revisit the outputs of that phase.
There's no
canonical order and there is no pre-described order and there's no these phases are not completely separated from each other.
Okay, where I was going with the comments was more so that maybe it would be useful to have an explicit audit phase that's added so that explicitly captures the fact that you might be revisiting these phases at some future phase.
Well, but that is, okay, I guess that relates to a comment that Peter said where there's a verification phase in Michael Denny's list, and we both, Amanda and I both discussed that, and we thought that it's not very sensible to say we have one verification phase when the whole point is of that ontology evaluation needs to happen during the life cycle, and the kind of evaluation you're doing and the things you're evaluating are changing across the life cycle. So instead of just saying, here's our evaluation phase and dumping everything there, we rather want to connect the evaluation activities to the different things that are going on during development and deployment, etc.
So if I were making, well, as you know, Ali, I have been making on the side, but not included in this, making a full diagram of the of, you know, trying to capture this lifecycle stuff, I have both sort of, you know, feedbacks, potential feedbacks going between stages in all directions, but also in some evaluation processes happening during each phase and a more intensive transition-oriented or validation phase happening at the end of each phase. So at every single phase, there's substantial evaluation in which that gathers information on whether the work product is sufficiently ready for the next dependent stage to begin. And I think it's, you know, there's a tradition of looking at the kind of thing that Mike Denny presented, which puts the validation in this one place, you know, that's also reflected in sort of the more rapid development and deployment cycle approaches in the notion of pre-deployment testing. And I think it's generally the case that just pre-deployment is when you have your most intensive evaluation of all requirements. And we do talk about that with respect to that stage. But yeah, we did start out with just that one stage, and then it made less and less sense the more we went until it seemed to actually contradict what we were trying to say.
Okay, well, I mean, the main point that I captured in the chat is that especially based on your current responses over the voice, it just seems that a lot of language is geared towards people who are only embarking on the ontology development process, and it's not as clear for people who are further along or who might already have an artifact, how they would apply these evaluation criteria, given that the induced nature of their life cycle phase. Or I don't know, but capturing what I'm saying fairly.
Check the first full paragraph on the top of page 3, and if you would, and just comment in the chat if you have any further thoughts, like, or specific thoughts,
sure,
about how we can improve that pickup.
Sure.
Michael. Michael?
Not hearing you, Mike. Oh.
You hear me now?
Yep.
Okay. Just want to follow up on some of Steve's comments as I was interpreting them. Because people say are using the word, like error, or the kind of a word. And to me, that seems to actually be more appropriate to, say, the later section here when we're doing the formal modeling and evaluation. And the way I was kind of looking at the section that you and Fabian wrote here with ontological analysis, I mean, I think the questions that you're addressing with ontological analysis don't really have anything to do with detecting errors at this phase. It's more, kind of just making sure that commitments have been identified and documented, so that then, you know, things, there's kind of a common point to go from here on in. Is that how you guys were interpreting it? Were you thinking of ontology, you know, errors, so to speak, being addressed at this point,
yeah,
or later?
Steve asked a mean question without knowing it, because he, you know, instinctively put his finger in a borderline case, because he asked about the subsumption question. Because often you define, I mean, the way you define stuff is by saying it's a subclass of something else and has a specific criteria. So you have a subsumption in there, which is, you know, from a logical point of view, an axiom. Axioms are what we would think are evaluated later in the implementation phase. But it's really part of the definition, so it fits into the ontological analysis. That's why I was, you know, not sure where, in the first instance, where it should be captured. It could be captured in both stuff. But Michael, you're absolutely right. The ontological analysis was not is more about really getting, representing what the domain, the part of the domain that, or understanding the domain in a way that represents accurately what the domain experts want to say, or, you know, not necessarily what they're saying because they might be confused, but getting an accurate picture of that. And I mean of the main entities, but this is really about the entities. It's not yet about the axioms. So you can't. I would agree with you. You can't make an error there, as long in the sense of detecting errors in our ontology, because errors are related to axioms.
The kind of thing that Steve was talking about that is an error that needs to be caught here. It's not a modeling error. It's an error if somebody's trying to explain or capture the model that they use in a non-native way, then they mistransfer, right? And because they don't understand the technical concepts on the other side. Yes, the aim of this stage, ontological analysis, is to capture the entities and relationships that are used that are seen in this chunk of world, and not worry about how we're going to model those in the formal sense yet.
I'm comfortable with that, but you might just have a forward pointer that just kind of preempts that kind of thing. That to say, you know, the notions of correctness don't apply at this point yet. That will be done in, you know, section X.
Great suggestion. Could you put that in the chat?
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, model design phase. I think that's mine. So when I started to talk about the ontological analysis, I mentioned that we basically split up what Matthew was talking calling the conceptual ontology, and conceptual ontology is the result of the ontological analysis, and that's namely identifying the entities that are important. The other half is making fundamental decisions about the design of the ontology. And that starts with deciding what ontology language you need. It has to do with embracing set of ontological distinctions and best practices. Often this comes with an upper ontology, and also breaking down the ontology into modules. Not writing the modules yet, but just, you know, instead of having, usually you don't want to have one big blob, but you want to break it up and coming up with structure for that. And two things to which should go along with this. So in the exploration phase, one important thing was identify competency questions that represent the use cases. So when you do the breakup into modules, now it's necessary to revisit that and see what the modules need to contribute in order so that you will be able to answer the competency questions. So you formulate competency questions for the individual models that basically describes as a way of describing and capturing what the capabilities of the individual models need to be. And another note we put in here, is which is pointing also forward, is that there might be a conflict between the requirements you get from the what we call model quality. So you want to model fitness because you need to represent the domain to some extent in order to perform the functions of the ontology. And so so this will, you know, the model fitness will determine the required expressivity of the ontology language. But then you have operational requirements, which also lead to restrictions on potential on the expressivity. So in the worst case, you might be in a situation where one leads to requirements where you have a very expressive language, but then the other requirements lead to prevent you from using that in the app. That's something which points forward to the model implementation phase, because then you will really need to distinguish between different levels of ontology. Again, we have a section where we capture the evaluation questions, or some of the evaluation questions. Again, I'm sure that you will have suggestions for additions. So they're ranging all on, obviously, on design stuff, like do you follow best practices, is the language appropriate, are the modules covering the whole space that you need to cover, and do you have competency questions associated with all of them? Any questions? No questions, I guess. That means it's your turn.
Hold on. I have an idea I don't want to lose, so I'm putting it in the chat, which is basically that maybe some of the visibility of, or some of the issues with it, the things seeming narrower than they are in targeting, would actually be helped by having an extension of our diagram that shows entry into the process by different kinds of potential evaluators. The first kind being folks at the beginning of an ontology lifecycle. The second kind being...
Let's just defer that discussion, because we have half an hour, I think.
Okay. Let me just type. Almost done. I didn't want to lose that. So system design phase is where we are, right? So in this section, we talk about the how the intended usage plays out of the ontology. What the ramifications of that are for the design of the system in general, and about in how the ontology is embedded in and implemented in it. We mentioned a few specific questions that this phase should address, like what if any inputs will there be to the ontology once deployment happens, right? So is this going to be a dynamic ontology post deployment, and if so, what interfaces will enable that? Is the ontology going to be connected to some data sources, and if so, how?
This is Alan Goldstein. I have an appointment to see Dr. Katz on May 7th. And I have
somebody
to that
doesn't realize they're not muted. There we go.
No, actually, it's some crosstalk on.
Oh, really?
Your line. Yes.
Huh.
Go ahead. It's gone now.
Crazy. Okay. All right. So what this also includes questions about how the ontology will be interacted with by the folks building the system, how it will be evaluated and maintained, how any collaboration on it or, you know, use of modules will be supported, and most usage-driven, what operations is the ontology supposed to support? And how will those operations be performed? By what? This is in here in part because of the degree to which there is feedback between the ontology design and the overall system design, and it does not tend to get sufficient time and attention. I've discussed this somewhat in various points in the summit, but you know the extreme but sadly not uncommon case is the people not realizing that if they want to do reasoning with an ontology, they also need a reasoner. things like this. But more explicitly, just a phase in which all the ontology-enabled operations are clearly analyzed as to what components, interfaces, or aspects of the system design are required or should be included in order to make those happen. And for the evaluation, we did it in one of the places where we said, there are some ontology-specific considerations in the design, but the evaluation of the system, the design evaluation, we probably don't have anything to add to that, right? the mature best practices and methods for doing that apply here. And that's it for this section. Does anybody have a question before we go to the next?
Doesn't look like it. Shall I go to the model build phase?
Yeah.
Okay. So the model build phase is the longest section. It answers the question of Peter, where is the ontology built? And also of Steve, hopefully, at least partially, where are all the intrinsic evaluation? So the model build phase actually has four major sub activities. So you continue with informal modeling, and again these second sub activities might flow together. You continue the you do the informal modeling, you formalize the competency questions, because the competency questions are then used to guide the formal modeling, and at least to some degree. And the then there's the last phase, which is we call operational adaption. So I'll talk for each of these activities. We have evaluation methods pointed out. So the informal modeling is really nothing else but the ontological analysis now done on four individual modules and in more detail. So while the initial ontological analysis was identifying the key stuff, now you are doing it to the degree that it's necessary. The competency questions and the evaluation methods, I should mention, that are the same as for the ontological analysis. The competency questions are a form of capturing requirements, and in particular, they give you a good measure of whether your ontology is complete, whether you need additional axioms. And this is the place where you take the competency questions that have been developed before and formalize them using the terms that have been identified in the ontological analysis stage and using the language that has been decided on in the ontology design and the model design phase. And the evaluations is only, are you really capturing
the competency questions properly, and are the competency questions representative? So you might add new competency question actually here while you're doing that work. The formal modeling then is where the work is done, where the ontology is built, and it is the way we break this out is because we want to distinguish between the ontology. Well, we had this problem of ontology you might have different requirements, and so that means you might build an ontology that represents everything wonderfully, but at least for specific tasks, reasoning with it is not fast enough, or some other operational requirements aren't met. So we distinguish between what we call reference ontology and an implementation ontology, and the formal modeling is.
I cannot hear you, Fabian. Is that me or?
No, I agree. I lost Fabian.
Yeah, he dropped.
I think we all lost it.
Okay. Are you still there, Amanda?
Yes, I am. Just trying to see if he appears to be still online, so it might just be the call that dropped. I believe that what Fabian was moving into, he's talking about the formal modeling, the reference model being the sort of implementation independent high quality ontology that results. We have an additional step included called operational adaptation, and this is sort of the pragmatic reality bit where it may be the case that some compromises need to be made for operations, and as we think the best practice is not that the ground formal model itself is compromised, but there may be an adaptation of it to support particular performance requirements or input format provision and so forth.
Fabian says he's back.
Okay. Fabian?
Star 7, Fabian, maybe.
Hello?
Hello.
Am I back?
Yes.
Good. Sorry. My phone was dropped. Twice, actually. Did you finish the phase?
I picked up. I thought you were just going into the operational adaptation.
Okay. Yeah. So this was something that. I shall I pick the operational adaptation?
I said something about it, but I think it's fine if you wanna.
Okay, well, this was one of the things that I think Steve and Leo mentioned, that you might, for example, decide to use the ontology with a different semantics, or likely because of performance issues. So you run it, you build an ontology in, let's say, first order logic, and then run it on a closed world assumption. Then in a way you have a different ontology now, which might look very similar. Or another example would be that you just remove certain axioms because they don't fit the expressivity of the language that you want to use, or the reasoner doesn't fit the expressivity that is supported by the reasoner. So you use OWL full and then OWL EL for reasoning. For example, are there any questions concerning the build?
Oh, Fabian?
Yes.
we do have room to like include examples like such as you just gave for clarification. So it might not be a bad idea to include those sometimes.
I think we included the open world assumption example.
Well, no, maybe the latter one. You know, your the alpha, L-E-L, you know.
Okay.
You know, that's a good example to include just to kind of clarify, make things concrete.
Peter?
I suggested on the chat already, there's a specific reason why you call this the model build phase rather than the ontology build phase. I think ontology build seems to be more appropriate here. I mean, it includes informal modeling, formalization, and so on. Just a suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with calling it ontology build phase. We tried to reuse some of the terminology that has been proposed by the track champions, and the problem is that we are, especially with the ontology build phase. I mean, since we consider ontology as, or at least track B was considering ontology as the software artifact. But Rabbitus
has agreed that model is synonymous with ontology.
No, I actually don't believe it's synonymous with ontology. But you know, we ran out of words, so we just
neither
used
do
the
I.
one. the label. We just used some of the convenient labels that lay around from the. I'm happy to replace all of these words. We are not married to the words, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right, and I will say that I agree that I think ontology is a bit better because model is more general, and it's not necessarily the case that everything we're talking about applies to other kinds of modeling, and so it's clearer if we don't appear to be going beyond the ontology world. But yes, I agree with Fabian that some of this was just attempting to use material from the syntheses that were provided. But I also prefer ontology model, ontology build and design.
Okay, Amanda, are you going to take over?
Yep. Okay, system build phase. Now, we talked earlier about the system design and particularly paying attention to how the inclusion of the ontology affects that. This is similar. We are not. This is a short section because we're not trying to tell people how to build systems in general or how to evaluate built systems in general. What we talk about here is making explicit that the system build phase includes the building of any components and subsystems that interact with the ontology and the creation of that integration and anything necessary to it. And it's important to call out as part of the ontology lifecycle, in part because for most applications, when an ontology is being used within an information system, many of the functionalities to be supported by the ontology will not be realizable or testable directly by interaction with the ontology alone. It'll be only once this phase is carried out that you can get close to full visibility on whether your operational requirements are fully being satisfied. So there at this point, additional requirements come into play and become evaluable more directly. questions on that before we go into deployment? Okay. I know we're running out of time, so.
15 minutes.
Yeah. Deployment, for the deployment phase.
Sorry, what? She disappeared again. I'm sorry for interrupting you. Pavitra, I had her hand.
Okay. So the deployment phase is, as suggested by the name, the phase in which an ontology goes from development and environment and status to a production or live use environment. Now, the biggest implications for here actually come typically beforehand as an iteration of build is coming towards its end when it seems to be ready for deployment. Generally, the evaluation stage that happens at that point, the transition to deployment, is probably the most intensive evaluation that goes on, and generally includes a period during which no further changes are permitted. Deployment usually occurs after some targeted development goals have been achieved. It's important to note that for many styles of projects, there may be goals set at the beginning of a design development deploy cycle that are actually not met at the end, by the time the time period for this comes to an end, while other goals have been met. So it may be the case that there were three functionalities that were or improvements that were meant to be made in this iteration, and when we hit the deployment phase, actually two of them have been completed and one has not. Because of that, some of the questions for evaluation at this stage include whether deployment is actually warranted here. So we assume that we've gotten to this point without major problems, right? We assume that the ontology is functional, that the system evaluation with the ontology in place doesn't have flaws that would make it non-operational, but there's still an open question as to whether ontology, whether the deployment should go through at this point. So we've included those questions in the evaluation. The line there between sort of the project management view and the ontology view is a bit blurry, it's important that these be considered at this point. And we included regression testing because this is of course a standard software engineering technique, but it is woefully underused in iterative ontology release, and it can be used. So the kind of tests that Fabian talked about before to check on capabilities provided by the ontology can be turned into unit and regression tests and run to make sure that a new ontology version doesn't cause some regression in capabilities. So that's recommended there. Fabian, I've forgotten whether I was going to do use and maintenance or you were.
You did.
Okay. Use and maintenance. This is the post-deployment phase, right? This can go on for an indefinite amount of time, which is one reason why we separated it from deployment phase, which is finite. It's important to point out that phases can go on simultaneously here, because the use and maintenance phase for an ontology may be ongoing while the development of later versions is also going on. While an ontology is in use, the maintenance is supported by some means of gathering information about the use and what's succeeding, failing during that, whether the functionality is doing what it's supposed to. This could somewhat can be in the form of regular automated testing. It should also be in the form of problem reporting, as you would expect for other kinds of technical artifacts. And the simultaneity of sort of prior release use and new version development can be and is supported well by existing tools that support bug collection and stuff, which typically provide the ability to classify reports as bug reports or problem reports that go into the ongoing maintenance phase and the people working in that, versus feature requests or improvement requests, which go to a different group of people that are concerned, that are dealing with working on a next release in their in an earlier phase where they can incorporate those things. And the evaluation includes looking at sort of ongoing regression testing, looking at the reports coming in, finding out from directly querying users whether they're getting the functionality that they expect and need, and triaging problem reports to determine whether they're something that requires maintenance in this cycle or whether there's something that requires improvement or addressing in another development cycle for a major release. End of section.
Okay, seems that there are no comments so far. Okay, shall I move on? So the next section is incomplete in the sense that we didn't do the future outlook and the recommendations yet. But we have a section where we talk about tools for ontology evaluation, which is more or less taken from the results of track D. It's a little bit shorter, but so the point that is made here is really that the tools that are available right now don't have a life cycle view, and they are evaluating certain aspects of ontologies, which these aspects might be relevant at a given to evaluate at a given stage or not, and so you will have to choose different tools at different places, at different times, and we basically put in some words which said, okay, there are upcoming new tools, and this would be the place where we cross-link to the survey. I think that's more or less capturing what the section does. Well, Steve, I'm not sure whether this needs to be in the communique. I mean, the communique is a document which is afterward frozen in time, and I think it would be much more useful to have a place where which we can change and update.
Can you hear me? I'll
yes.
Just respond to that. I think, yeah, let's have a link to a place we can update, or
right.
At least to the place and
yes.
time. I don't think I have to list the tools here, but I do think we should take advantage of the fact that this is the front end of a whole bunch of rich stuff on the wiki.
Yes.
So I think
I was hoping that the result of the survey would include links to the tools which are discussed in that. So that's why I said that we link to the survey. But if that's not there, then there should be a link to some other place. And definitely,
yeah.
Yes. Yes.
We had, I don't know whether all the things that we were able to hear of during the sessions on Thursday are going to be in the survey. So let's not limit to just the survey.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I agree. Peter.
Yes, I assume your support and recommendations is just a placeholder title.
Right.
Like tool support should be a separate section from recommendations as far as I would like to see.
Yes, that's fine. I think, I mean, as you probably noticed, we ran out of steam here a little bit. So, yes, so we can make tools for ontology evaluation its own section and then have a next section which says recommendations for the future.
My main point actually is recommendations should be a separate section from the sort of more descriptive sections prior to it.
You mean, wasn't that what I said? Make recommendations its own section.
Opinions, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And yes.
Thank you.
Well,
I hope that people will take the time to go through the document and think about the various issues that have been raised and suggestions and observations that they have on balance now, sort of knowing where the whole thing is going, that they may have in specific places or about things that they think are missing. And sending those to the mailing list, the discussion list, would be great.
I have one question. Did you, unfortunately, that was right the minute where I dropped out. Did you discuss the role of evaluation in the formal modeling section where we talk about the intrinsic evaluation?
Oh, no, I did not.
Okay, so then Steve probably is not very happy currently. So maybe I should just go back to that. So when we talk about formal modeling, that was what I was about to say when I was dropped. That's where the stage where we build stuff, and the formal so the ontology as model can be evaluated in two aspects. One is the quality of the model, which is more or less independent of the requirements, and then the evaluation of the model fitness, where fitness means meeting the requirements of the operational environment in particular. And so the first part, the model quality, that has two aspects. One or two ways of how that's usually done, and that's mostly intrinsic evaluation. We included there's something which has been literally taken from the summary from the track, and other aspect, which is maybe not purely intrinsic, is whether you follow best practices, which might require more than intrinsic evaluation. And the third one is whether the ontology is evaluation of the of the model using some domain knowledge. Again, that might you might be able to do that intrinsically, partially, but sometimes you would need some extrinsic or some additional information. So I hope that addressed this. Steve?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I read that section and I actually recognized it. in fact, one of my changes didn't make it in. But anyway, in our own text, I would just again suggest we provide in all of these sections links to material that's on the wiki. You could provide here a link to our, the intrinsic synthesis page, for example, just to again guide the reader toward some of the other more extensive material that exists out there.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, my hand was raised for a much more mundane logistic question, which is I noticed in the Google Doc we aren't allowed to add comments. And I was just wondering if there's some way to have that to be allowed, and then you guys can sort of read them, decide what to do in place, and then you can delete the comment or whatever.
We can do that. We didn't do that for this session because it would quickly become overwhelming to be able to even track what comments were connected to what pieces of the document.
Sure. How about now, in the future, after?
Yeah.
It just seems to be a lot easier for you rather than reading an email, which then points to, tries to make reference to something in the document. If we just had I don't know.
That seems to me, yeah. I mean, I'm not familiar with Google Docs very much, so.
Yeah. I'm looking to see whether I can change it to, yes, I can. Okay. I can change it to kind of comment without allowing editing.
Yeah.
So I have now that.
Hopefully you can also make it so that you can, make the comments invisible at times if you just want to read the document. But
yes, you can always do that by hitting the comment bar up by the share button.
Yeah, yeah.
I have now enabled commenting.
Oh, okay. Google doesn't tell me that, but maybe I got to refresh. Okay.
You might need to refresh.
Yep, it works. Okay, great. I think that'll really help. Thank you.
Great suggestion.
Thank you.
Thank you. That will make life much easier.
Yep.
Any other questions? Well, if not, Peter, I'm sure you will have announcements.
It's the same announcement. There is a hackathon weekend again coming up in 2 days. This Saturday, 3 projects will be featured, so come join us. Details were in the announcement, so I won't go through it. And, of course, next Thursday would be part 2 of this communique review session. Hopefully everyone will be back to look at the next and the near final version of it. And for those who haven't yet registered for the symposium, please register. And for tool makers who haven't responded to the survey, please do so. I think that represents everyone. We hardly have responses to the survey quite yet. Torsten, I actually have a question for you. You entered something, but you did not move on to the next tabs. There are like 8 different tabs. You were only on the first one, so please move on. Originally, the description weren't very clear. It's now clarified, and so please move through the 7 phases before quitting on the survey. That's all. Back to Fabian.
Can I just jump in for a sec on the comments?
Yes.
Just tried one. If you click the comments box, that's probably not the place to add a comment. What you want to do is highlight some text and right-click, and it invites a comment. Otherwise, your comment is just like, you know, applying to the whole document, which is...
Right, I'm sorry. Yes, that's mostly what I meant by about clicking comments was to make them visible or hide them in some cases. But you're right, yes. You want to highlight the text that you're commenting on and then right-click and click comment. And that way it will... it'll be clear what it's applying to, and it will.
Joel has some comment. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but I'm playing with it. Maybe. Anyway, do what Amanda says.
Yeah, it is true that if you click a comment, it will. Does now I think I don't know where. Right, so if you had some text highlighted when you made the comment, then clicking on the comment will select the text that you had highlighted.
Okay.
Yeah, Steve, this is Joel. Yeah, when I clicked on your comment, the structural properties include statement was then automatically highlighted for me.
Okay, because I added it, unfortunately, twice now, two ways. One, the way Amanda recommended it, and the other way was the way I had mentioned. So maybe it did work. I don't know. I can't tell which one is which now.
Okay. Well, I'm going to delete my comment about your comment.
Okay. I want to do that, too.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for attending our meeting, and thank you, everybody, for all these wonderful inputs. We will work hard to improve the version so that we have a better version next time. See you all.
Great job.
This is fantastic. Wonderful
thank you.
Work.
Yeah, excellent.
Bobby and Amanda, thank you. Bye-bye.
Talk
to you all next week.
Bye.